Welcome back, Encounter. Oh, love you guys. Love that you're back. Love seeing the full room. I'd like to make a few introductions for you. Some of you are new, I know, and Phil already introduced himself and does just an amazing job at our ministry with doing ministry to the community, really. Service projects and mission trips and such like that. He's all over it. Ben, what can I say? It's really an awesome friend. Not just that he's a good worship leader. Obviously that's a given. But he's a good friend to me and I think a really good, exceptional disciple maker. His wife, Joe, he's also a part-time, works here. They have 5 boys. I think we can excuse her for the evening. She's home with 5 boys. And I have a wife, not on staff. But Joe, actually, I'll tell you about Joe. Joe is his wife. Joanne is just a lover of you girls. And she'll be heading up different girls' outings and retreats and discipling some of the girls, too. I have a wife, her name's Paulette, and I also have 5 kids. Did any of my kids make it tonight, by chance? No? All right. I kind of gave them an out about an hour ago and said if they were too tired. They're all involved with activities and sports and stuff. I have 5 kids. 4 of them are in junior high. So I am in a very new stage of life. We had a softball game, 2 different cross-country practices, a football practice, and I just carried Ren with me wherever I went. She's my aunt. So that's my family, and I gotta say I feel like I've got the best staff in the country. I really do, and I don't say that lightly. I don't say that. I really don't even say that as a joke in any way, shape, or form. They are amazing in the way that they serve you, but I think the thing that makes them the best is that they are all very humble. And that's really what we want to communicate to you tonight more than anything else, is that we really want to just be humble givers and lovers to you, and let you know that we're not really trying to impress you tonight as much as we're trying to let you just see the real us, and hopefully this will become a family for you as it's been for a lot of people before you. I'm going to open up our series this week, or this year, on this idea of becoming real. And it's something that's been kind of festering within me for about 8 months now. You guys have all heard of people maybe back in the 60s that, you know, said, I'm going to go find myself, and they'd jump on a bicycle or on a motorbike and they'd head out west. And there's this idea of just like seeking after yourself and finding your true identity. And I got to tell you that There is something about becoming real that is attached, obviously, I believe, to knowing Jesus. And I think we can all agree that we like those people that are real. You ever been, like, just first impression, you see somebody, you come back, and a big compliment is, they're just so real, right? As opposed to, they're just so fake. And nobody really likes the fakeness of somebody. And why is that? Well, obviously, we want to know a real person. But here's just maybe the next time you see somebody that's fake, maybe we'll help you have a little grace for them. I really believe that fake people are trying to be real. They just haven't become comfortable with themselves. And that's kind of what I really want us to do in the next 3 weeks is get comfortable with you and attaching yourself to God in a journey and becoming comfortable that way. There are a lot of ways that we could try to give you an idea as to what this ministry is about. There's a lot of things that I could probably do to try to explain. But this year I've decided to do something a little bit different. I've asked an alum of ours. He's been playing guitar back here. His name is Robbie. And he is a really good friend of mine, and he was a student. sitting in the same spot you were a few years back. And he now has a wife and a couple kids, and just in a different stage of life than you. But he's become more, I think, even more himself, more real, more attached to God, more of someone that is beautiful that you might want to see. So this is Robbie. And I want to just give him a chance to let him tell you what his experience here may have done to help him get to where he is.
Hey, guys. If you don't mind, I'm just going to share a little bit of my story. So my story actually starts long before I was born, and the fact that before I was born, God had a plan for me. And early on, when I was very young, I came to know Jesus. Was raised in an awesome family, six houses down from Pete. And all through junior high and high school, I really started to kind of experience and have a lot of people pouring into my life and saying, hey, this is who you are, and this is who you are. And to be honest, in high school, I was in every club possible. I was in the African-American Cultural Club, right on, the only Caucasian member. And proudly, I sang in the Glee Club, I sang in Madrigals, I was starting point guard, I was homecoming king, I sang in the musical. I was a random dude. And I thought that I had to do, like, everything. And that led as I got into college. And I don't know about any of you, but I saw the opening video and I was like, yeah, that was me. I knew I had these dreams, I had these passions of what I wanted to do, and I thought that the world was just going to hand them to me. And along the way, I just kept on. I have 8 colleges on my bachelor's transcript. 8. That's awesome, huh? And I never, ISU isn't even one of them. But I was here for several years, and I got involved with this ministry. And there are three ways that profoundly changed my story here. And the first is that I was this random, excited, crazy, wanted to be up front, wanted to be a leader, wanted to do these big things for God. And one of the ways that my story changed by being a part of Encounter was Pete became kind of a mentor in my life. And I remember at one point in time, he pulled me aside and he's like, Robbie, you are involved in a lot. A lot. And some of my other friends actually referred to me as a campus ministry slut. Because I would like lead worship 7 nights a week, sometimes twice a night, totally burn out, totally, and Pete just was like, dude, man, not that that's bad, but what's best? And he was one of the first voices that helped me figure out, you know, maybe, yes, I have some gifts and talents, but am I to be doing everything all the time? And he has profoundly impacted my life. In fact, just last week, someone asked to see my resume as I was getting ready to do a consulting job. And I looked, I was just proofing it, and Pete is still one of my references. And it was 10 years ago that I started in this ministry. Because I know he knows my heart, and I know his, and that was just awesome. The second way that just profoundly changed my story was my small group. In college, I got to be, there's just awesome community here at Encounter. We would be here until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, then we'd go over to Steak and Shake, you know, for 3 more hours, and then why not Denny's, you know, after that? And then why not back to someone's apartment? And we would, like, hang out, and we'd throw around Anchorman quotes, and we would, you know, hold each other accountable in the next breath. It was crazy. But I absolutely had a group of guys that became lifelong friends, that they were groomsmen in my wedding, and I was groomsmen in theirs, that I was there in the hospital right after their children were born, and they came to see mine. I'm even godparent to some of the kids of people who are married from this ministry, and have gone on to this day. They're the people that when I'm trying to figure out what's next for my job or what's next for our family or the marriage is kind of hitting just one of those tough spots, those are the guys that I call that continue to encourage me and to edify and to speak truth into my life. And it's just amazing that I met those guys here and that those guys still are profoundly impacting my life and now even the life of my children. And that's just awesome. And it totally, that small group totally changed my story and totally took me deeper with Jesus. And then the third thing, which profoundly impacted my life was, we used to do Encounter on Monday nights. And on this very stage, it was one of the first nights that I had come. I was playing drums, I think. And there was this girl that stood up right here. And man, she was wicked hot. And I'm just being honest. And at first, there was attraction. Second, then there was this, like, she shared her story about how she had come to find Jesus here through this ministry and totally redeemed and restored her life from the party scene and just trying to fill that void in her life. And she was up here in tears just sharing about how God moved in her life and was moving in her family. And I was like, yes, I like her. And afterwards, my buddy introduced me, and she apparently thought it was cool that I played drums in the band, and we were just friends for a while, and then we went to the fall retreat, and everyone was like, yeah, just friends. A lot of flirting, and it was just evident that this was the girl. Someone told me once, as you're pursuing Jesus, and you're running hard after him, and you look next to him, and there's a girl running next to you, marry her. And so... I went through this crazy scheme to propose to her. I had all these people involved, and I proposed to her, and she said yes. And you know what? Just last week we celebrated 7 years of marriage, and praise Jesus. And we have two beautiful girls that I love being their prince daddy, and dancing with them and singing Disney princess songs and restoring that in their life. And you know what? That obviously profoundly changed my story and has continued to just show me who I am. And when I graduated with that bachelor's degree with 8 college transcripts, I had the standard college degree that everyone gets, a bachelor's in Bible and theology with a minor in landscape design, right? And I got that degree issued from a campus I never even stepped foot on. I don't know. And through a random, I started out as an interior designer, then a landscape designer, and then a teacher's aide in a special ed classroom where these kids were stringing 4-letter words together, and I was like, that is awesome! You just cussed at me in ways I didn't even know were possible, and I love you! And I started as a teacher's aide, and now here I am 6 years later, and I'm the principal of my own alternative school. And I had no clue when I was up here and I was involved in this ministry how God would move and how God would take the randomness that is me, but he absolutely has used the people here to write chapters in my story, to change and to move and to guide me, to get me to that destination. And I'm continuing to evolve. I don't have it all together. I'm not the poster boy with the 2.5 kids and the wife. I'm just saying, I dare you to press in here to this ministry and see if this might be part of your story. Because one thing that I've noticed now that my wife and I have supported this ministry for the last 7 years is that God continues to use this ministry to move in the lives of young people and to guide and direct them to make glory for his name. And so I dare you to get involved because I've never seen God make short on the deal when people press into him and press into each other. So that's my story, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Just let him preach. Man, that was good. I want you to have a little bit of what Robbie's talking about. That you'd be real. And guys, I think for the most part, a lot of you are thinking, I will be real when I become the person that can do whatever job it is you think that you can get 5 years out. Because guys, we kind of get our identity out of what we do. And I'm telling you, it's not there. And girls, for the most part, you're thinking, I will become real when I am with someone 5 years out that will make me who I am. And that's a beautiful thing, but that's not going to make you real either. What's going to make you real isn't who you're with or what you do, it's who you are. And that's the journey I want to take us on here tonight. Have you ever noticed that you are only as confident and comfortable in your skin? It's kind of directly proportionate to if you are comfortable with the person in the room that is the most important and and they know your name, you're cool. Does that make sense? Like if you were here on campus and President Bowman comes in and he's like knows your name and he's like, hey, what's up? And you'd be like, hey, everyone else is just people. And he knows me and I'm cool now. I can be myself. Maybe that doesn't ring with you. I don't know. I've been told that that's true. I have a buddy of mine named Steve. Steve's in Michigan, and he's a basketball coach. And I have worked with him at some FCA camps before. He's a Christian. And his friend is also friends with me, campus minister at Michigan State. His name's Brad. Okay, so Brad and Steve. And Steve ended up befriending some guy who ended up coming to town. And it actually happened to be the dad through this basketball connection. I don't know exactly how it happened. The dad of Al Horford. Al Horford was a basketball player for Florida. And now he is an all-star in the NBA. And his dad lives with Steve in this apartment. It's kind of a bizarre deal. And they share this house together. I'm thinking, why can't he afford a house for his son or his dad? I don't know. But anyway, Steve hangs out with this guy. And so Steve ended up getting invited. Al Horford this year was part of the NBA All-Stars. And there's an All-Star game, and there's an All-Star dinner, and all this stuff. So just all the All-Stars are there. So you've got LeBron, and you've got Dwayne, and you've got some of the guys that are all hanging out in this place, right? And what's interesting about it is Steve ends up getting invited to be a part of this backstage dinner. And my buddy Brad is telling me about the hilarious phone call and conversation that he's having with Steve the whole time. Because Steve wants to share it with somebody the whole time, right? And his confidence is normally not really high, but is growing as the night's going on. Because he's like calling up Brad. He's like, Brad, sitting across the table from Kobe right now. Yeah, Kobe. He's right over here. And of course, Brad says he uses nothing but first names throughout the whole time, right? So he's just like, yeah, Kobe's looking right at me, looking over here. Pretending like I'm talking to somebody else or whatever, but yeah, he's sitting right across from me at the same table. And this is going on and going on. Wait a second. Shaq's coming. He's like, hi, Shaq. Who's up? Shaq just said hi to me. Shaq just said hi to me, and going on. It was just hilarious. And so I was thinking about that, and thinking about what kind of a increase in confidence comes when the most important person in the room recognizes you. I don't think these people knew his name. It's probably not going to happen. But what if they did? What if God knew your name? And what if he called you by that? I just think that'd be so cool. Hey, Pete. And I think most of us believe that he does know our name. But let me take it one step further. What if God had a nickname for you? Coco. Pete Meister. Cocoa Krispies. Had one more on here. Oh, the Coconator. I think the Coconator would be great. We got that, Jared? Oh, it was good. That's good. That's not right. Coconator. I kind of like that one. Let me take it one step deeper than even that. I believe that the Bible teaches that God has one name, one unique name for you. Just you. And I believe that you are being developed into being that name, being that person. And one day will be revealed to you who that is. I believe that Robbie has yet to determine exactly who he is supposed to be. Yet he's on his way. I believe that I'm on my way. I believe that many of us are on our way. And I believe that God has this name that he has made just for you. That he has, when he formed you in your mother's womb, he said, I have a name for you. And I have a specific character that I'm going to put into this person, and personality traits, and a certain number of hairs on their head that I'm going to count and know, and I am going to make sure that they know their name one day. This is what we're to strive for, and I believe that is really what we're to be real. To be real is to know your name. It's to know who you are. I was so discouraged. I went on the internet when I was, actually, it wasn't even the internet. It was some program that we had back in college when I worked for the admissions department of my school. And what they did is they you could look up any name in the country, and it would just list out, you know, address and phone number, something like that. And I thought, I've got to be the only Pete Coco. Got to be the only Pete Coco. There's like 820 of us. I look on that list, I'm like, are you kidding me? Who are these people? I got to find them. There was one guy here in town, actually, for a while, whose name, I know his name was Pete Coco, but it was spelled differently, and that was kind of a funny story in and of itself. I ended up getting a phone call one morning, like 5:30 in the morning. Of course, just jostled, and I'm thinking, I must have forgotten a meeting or something. I don't know why the phone's ringing. And it's like, Pete? Yeah. Pete Coco? Yeah. We're almost there. Okay. I'm sure it'll come to me in a minute here. I'm sure it'll come to me. But how do we figure out who we're going to be? Most of those people on that video would tell you that the reason that they ended up becoming as real as they did, becoming the person that they did as they got into a small group. And tonight I really want to make one big point, is that becoming real has an awful lot to do with the community that you choose. And in the community that you choose, I want you to make it one that you can be known. That people know your name. That people understand you. And that they actually invest in you. And that can't happen here at Cape. What needs to happen, and where I've always said, is I've always said that real relationships and real life change happens kneecap to kneecap. And we need to be in groups that we're allowed to do that. So what we've done is we've tried to make it as easy as possible for you. We tried to make them small. And we have this really, really edgy name that we've thrown out there to kind of make people remember these groups and stuff. We're calling them small groups. Okay? If you want to know the reason behind it later, just come and ask me, you know. But these small groups are going to be probably about 10 people, and they're all going to be the same sex. All be girls, all be guys. And you're all about the same age. We feel like it's important that you are with your peers. And so 22, 23, 24, down to 18. It seems like you guys are getting younger. Maybe there's even 17, 18-year-olds. Just want you to be in a group that you can be real with other people. And tonight I really want to kind of push us in that direction. And the way I want to do that is I want us to all take a rock. Did everybody get a rock when you came in? If you didn't, I want you to get one. I want you to get it. Who didn't? Does anybody not get one? Can we get these guys some rocks? Everybody needs a rock. There's a few here, a few over there. Okay. And I want you to hold this rock. And what I want us to do as we go through this night is I want to introduce you back to an ancient system that I became familiar with a couple weeks ago. And that is, a long time ago, if you wanted admission to a special event or a number of different reasons that you'd have it. You'd have a rock. You'd have a white rock, and it would be given to you as almost an extension of yourself. that this rock would be not just a rock. It wouldn't be like just a ticket, but it would be like, it'd be like an extra hand. It'd be like you. It'd be a part of you. And this part of you goes around with you, and it gives you certain privileges and perks and opportunities. And you take this rock with you, and it would get you into certain things. And other people with their white rock would also get into certain things. And if you had the white rock, you were something. You were somebody. You were a community. You belonged. And I want to tell you that the first item of business I want to talk about tonight, when you're picking a community, pick one where you can belong. Something you can belong to. And what I mean by belong, we have to define that, because this rock I'm giving you today is an extension of you. And you're going to say, I don't really need it. I know you don't need one, but I'm giving it to you anyway. And I want you to take this seriously tonight, that you have in your hand opportunity and power to use this however you want. It is an extension of you. And you can get into any community on this campus you want with this rock, matching up with other people that have used their rock in the same way to get into that same community. And you have all, in your way before, gotten into communities before, maybe communities that have gotten you into trouble. There are communities on this campus that really revolve around the idea of, let's sin and sin real good, and let's have a good time doing it. And there is sort of this idea within belonging, right, that we have to have something in common. There's a need for commonality. And if the commonality is a certain sin, or maybe it's just video games, maybe it's just whatever entertainment suits you, there is this normal consequence that comes from that that usually says, I'm not going to probably move out of that. I'm just picking people that are like me, so I'm comfortable. They make me feel good because they do what I do, and we just kind of make each other feel good, and we just kind of keep this community the way it is. That's one opportunity. The other opportunity is you could revolve this whole community around the idea of righteousness. And you could say, you know what? I'm going to be the most righteous person on the face of the campus. And I'm going to grab two or three other people that are going to also be righteous. And we're going to memorize lots of scripture, and we're going to make everybody else feel bad because we're going to be good. And we're going to just make ourselves good. Now, as a campus minister, which one of these groups do you think that I want you to be in? It is a trick question. I want to tell you something right out of the gate. Jesus called people that gathered themselves in a commonality way around an idea that they felt like they were better. He called them Pharisees. And the reality is that there is not one of us here that are righteous. Not one. And so you have no choice but to be in the sin camp. We're all here. But we do have a choice as to whether or not this sin camp is going to make us feel better about where we're at and we just stay where we're at, or whether or not we are going to try to be like a man named Jesus, and whether or not we're going to strive towards something better. Jesus wants us to strive to be like him. God wants us to look like his son. And the commonality that I am encouraging you to use today, I'm encouraging you to use the extension of yourself, this rock, as admission into a small group at Encounter this year, so that you can surround yourself with other people that are sinners just like you and say, yeah, but you don't know mine. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah, but I've really struggled with, yeah, so do I. Join the club. We're all right here. Yeah, but I don't know much about the Bible. You don't have to. We're just a group that understands that being complacent and being a person that's just going to lick each other's wounds and just kind of help each other feel better, that's not helping anything. But that we're going to strive to be like a man named Jesus. And if that's what you want, man, we want you in the group. And you know, bring your cigarettes. I don't care. We don't want you to think there's anything out there that's going to be like, oh, they. Because for too long, people, the church has been viewed as this perfect thing that I got to be, and I can't be that, so I'm not going to be in it. That's not us. That's not the church. It's got to be that. I invite you in. Would you use your commonality? Would you use your rock as admission into a small group this year? It changes lives. The second community, it's the same community, but the second characteristic of a community that I would strongly encourage you to use your rock for, to use your extension of you for, is find a community of freedom. A community of freedom. We all sort of understand what commonality is. We know what belonging is. It's one of our biggest needs. And love is attached to belonging. It's sort of synonym. But this idea of freedom is something that a lot of us maybe have never tasted. The idea of freedom is something that we really all want, but we don't know how to get. Because a lot of you don't know, like I didn't know, you don't know what freedom really is. You don't know what it's like to be free from yourself, free from the sin that's just kind of kept you bonded up. But some of you know what it feels like for a little bit, and then you move on. And before I get a little further into that, I did have a verse I wanted to read to you about our belonging, and I forgot it. I forgot to read it. Oh yeah, we got to read this. So back up here. Beep, beep, beep. Okay, we're going. There we go. We're back into, what are we back into? Belonging. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came, and they ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees, when they saw that Jesus was doing this, they said, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and with sinners?" And on hearing this, Jesus said, Hey, I don't know if you threw the haze in there, but it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's going to probably happen in a few days, or maybe it's going to happen next week. But there's going to be a guy outside of Cape and Auditorium right here in the choir. And he's going to be holding a big old sign that says, "Adulterers and fornicators, you're going to hell, hell, hell." It's my best impersonation. Sorry. And I want to remind you that when he does, and he will, he'll be there. When he does, I want to remind you of this, that Jesus never yelled at sinners. He ate dinner. And Jesus, he never condemned. He forgave. And he didn't judge. He loved. And I don't know what you might feel like is keeping you from being in this group of sinners that just want to be like Jesus. Like, don't you want to be like that guy? That's what we want to be like. And if that's enticing you, then I encourage you to use your admission wisely. The second verse for our next group. What was our next category? Freedom. Somebody said it. When you're thinking about a community, it needs to be free. And we need to understand this freedom. This Galatians 5 says this: "It is for freedom that Christ has set us free." Gosh, that seems silly. Of course it's for freedom that he said is free. Not so silly when you think about the rest of the verse. "Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. I think a lot of us have been at a church camp, or you've been at a church, or maybe it was just you and the Lord in your room one night, and you experienced forgiveness, and you experienced freedom. And in that freedom, you had the choice to do anything you want, because you're free. And when you choose sin again, it just kind of brings you right back to being a slave again. But this is talking about this being ongoing. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. It is for freedom that you've been set free. He set you free to be free and to stay free. And man, I really want us to experience an ongoing freedom. Not something that we experience like one time in a night, and the song's just right, and everything's cool, and my heart's right, and I'm clean, and then I just go home, and boom. Starts all over again. But I'm talking about an ongoing freedom. And that happens. It only happens, I think, through the context of community. It's so hard to do that by yourself. And through the context of community, I'm asking you to be a part of this freedom thing. And I don't know how I can explain it to you. I can tell you some examples of how I've seen that happen before. Some of you I know are new to town. If you go downtown Bloomington, go to Washington Street and turn right, you go down a little ways on the left-hand side, you're going to see this sign that says Jesus House. And it's not a good part of town. I don't recommend going by yourself, ladies. But if you go down there and you walk in, you ask for a guy named Tom. Tom was on drugs real hard when many years ago, and his wife too. And he said, I prayed. I've been down, I've visited Tom. I brought some of my students down to see Tom before. Tom's a neat guy. A lot of neat stuff has happened in his life. He actually had so much godly stuff happening to him, they asked him to be a preacher. He said it was the worst 2 years of his life. I just don't like being with those church people. Gotta come back down here. It's like you. So Tom was telling his story, and it's a good one. Telling a story about how he came off of drugs through a simple prayer. He says, I was just free. And I prayed that my wife would too. Now, we're talking about some hard drugs. Maybe heroin, I don't remember what exactly, but I remember he said she became free. And he says, what we did is we sat in our house. And this is how this Jesus House burst. He says, we sat in our house in a very poor part of town. He says, and we saw people, many people walking up and down the streets that were homeless, that were strung out on drugs, and they needed freedom like we had experienced freedom. He says, we put up a sign, and it just said Jesus. And he said, there were stories of people that were on their way to commit suicide that see the sign in a house, and they say, must be a sign. And they walk up the steps, and he says, knock on the door, and he says, and they're just real people that are just honest and down there on the porch. And I remember this quote. I love it. He said, I don't really know how to pray for healing. I don't really know what fangle-dangle thing I'm supposed to say. All I know is that we worship the Lord, we sing, and we ask God for healing. Addictions just seem to fall off of me. I want that. I want that kind of freedom to be on. And I know that that happens in the context of communities of people and groups. And I think that those people that were walking up and down the street, they really are aimless and helpless and didn't know how to find it themselves, but just three or four people that were just kind of new at the whole thing and inexperienced, just letting God lead, allowed for addictions to fall off. Our small groups are not led by people that are excellent Bible study scholars. They're just students like you. And what we're asking them to do is to just be honest with you, to be real with you, to pray simple prayers and to see what God might do. That's our prayer this year. I'm praying that you will be wise in your investment. that you take this extension of yourself and that you use it in a way that would be honoring God and being wise. Last thing. We have a slide. Do we have that verse? I think we got it up here. This is from Revelation 17. This is going to be the end, people. This is going to be at the end of this journey that you're on. This is a promise. This is going to happen. So I will also give that person a white stone with a new name written on it, known only to the one who sees it. I'm not stupid enough to think that every single person is going to stay in this community this year. And if you need to move on, that's awesome. Wherever you go, I pray you can plug in somewhere. There's a lot of good ministries on this campus. But I'm asking you to do me a favor. This is for everybody. People that might not come back. Would you put this down? Would you put it on your desk? You can use it as a paperweight or a weapon. And you can have it there as a reminder that one day there's going to be a name written on you. There's going to be a name written on you that's going to be yours from God. And He's kind of carving out opportunities for you along this way to help you become what you need to be. Ben talked a little bit last night in our prayer circle, our prayer time before, on the eve of the school year, that God might be a wind in your face, or He might be a wind at your back, but He is developing, He's molding you to what you need to be. And you know what? You can really be obstinate, and you can just walk from that, and you won't know that. But if you invest in the Lord, I believe that you're closer and closer, just like Robbie is on this journey. He's coming closer and closer to the Lord the older he gets, the older I get. I'm beginning to see Jesus in new ways. He's changing me into a person that I never thought I'd be when I was 20 years old. Pray that. Here's what we're going to do to wrap up our evening. I'm going to ask you to fill out one of those small group cards and place it in these KFC buckets that will be passed around. We have those Who Are You cards as well if you want to fill that out. Quite frankly, that's secondary importance to me, but we do want those. We'd like to figure out who you are and maybe have a chance to use some of that information on the back at some point. But I believe that if you fill out a small group card, we are going to get to know you. And I want this to be a time where usually what happens, I'll just be really honest with you, usually what happens is we stand and we worship and then we pass this thing and the bucket just doesn't get to go around. We feel like this is probably the most important time of our year, is starting off right with a group of people that want to be serious about using the extension of themselves to invest into this community. So take some time, fill out that card. I'm going to pray to start, and then just meditate on this idea that God knows your name, and that this could be a place where you can become more you. Jesus, I thank you for this chance to be with these people. Thanks for a new school year. We are pumped. We're so excited about new beginnings. And God, I know that there are a number of people in this room that really need a new start. They need a fresh beginning, a place where they can become a new person. And God, I ask that you would give them courage to join in, to be with us, to know that they're not going to be judged. Nobody here is any better than anyone else. That we would just allow your Spirit to dictate the direction of our year. I'm excited to see what kind of life change is going to happen, what kind of relationships are going to be built, what kind of fun we're going to have. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.